parcels on a 10.6-acre portion of a 30-acre property in the residential suburban land use category for property located off 21st Street, adjacent to the city of Paso Robles in the 4th District. Recommendation is for denial of the appeal. Staff is requesting the cover sheet be amended, correcting the supervisorial district to be District 1. That's all your changes for today.
Isn't there one on the next page, item C5?
Do I have two pages?
Yes.
Item C5 is a hearing to consider amendments to the land use element in Title 22 of the County Code, Land Use Ordinance G030015M, a proposal by Midland Pacific Building Corporation, and G990025M, a proposal by Ken Craig and the Lucy Amar Unified School District, 1st and 4th District. Recommend your board take tentative action. SAP is requesting the cover sheet be amended, correcting the recommendation to read as follows. Recommend your board take tentative action with final action occurring through the subsequent adoption of the resolution and ordinances approving all amendments in the Winter General Plan Amendment Cycle for 2005. Now, that's all your changes for today.
Yes, it is. Okay, thank you very much. With that, we will move on to the presentation calendar.
Is there approval? Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. Mr. Patterson, you have the first presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Biz, would you please come to the podium, please? This is a resolution honoring the Economic Opportunities Commission on its 40th anniversary. Before I read the resolution, I'd just like to say that whether... thank you, Harry. Whether you have young children or aging parents, the depth and breadth of the programs offered by EOC have in one way or another touched all of us, I'm sure. The following resolution is hereby offered and read. Whereas the Economic Opportunity Commission of San Luis Obispo County was established by congressional decree and then by the County Board of Supervisors on December 9, 1965, as San Luis Obispo County's official community action agency, and whereas the Economic Opportunity Commission is a private nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to eliminating the causes of poverty by assisting low-income individuals and families to build the skills needed for stability and greater self-sufficiency, gain access to new opportunities, and to achieve economic independence through an array of community-based programs and actions. And whereas the Economic Opportunity Commission is directly responsible for service planning and delivery of community programs, including Early Head Start, Head Start, Migrant and Seasonal Head Start, State Migrant Child Care, State Preschool, State General Child Care Resource Connection, Energy Conservation Weatherization Services, Health Services including Clinical, Health Education and Youth Development Programs, Emergency Services, Homeless Shelter and Support Services, Adult Day Services, and Parent Education and Child Abuse Prevention Services. And whereas the Economic Opportunity Commission, as an independent organization which serves 35,000 low-income persons annually by working in partnership with volunteers, county government, city government, the private sector, and low-income populations throughout San Luis Obispo County. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the County of San Luis Obispo Board of Supervisors, State of California, does hereby recognize and congratulate the Economic Opportunity Commission on its 40th anniversary.
And if you like that, we can line up and
help the official photographer take a good picture of the ladies. Okay, will you guys come together?
Thanks.
We have to squish. This is squish time.
Thank you. This is family time.
Used to be at Cal Poly, it was called mingle.
Yeah. It's a dated term, Harry.
Yes. Yes.
Let's
get Paul. He's our other board member that's here. Paul, come on out.
Thanks for doing this.
This looks like breakfast the other morning.
We can get all the blues here if you want to.
All the blues? Sure. All everybody?
Everybody in a blue shirt, get up here. You're all part of it. The blues brothers and sisters.
The blues team.
There's nobody in the office, is what he's trying to say.
No, there's people.
Oh, there's still
people.
Okay.
And then
come
close
on,
the door.
Our staff and
get on both sides.
Betsy and the children, I don't know how we'll see them, but come on.
I think if
put them
the
on top of the desk.
Put them on top of the desk.
You know, we can't carry the children.
Come on up a little bit. I don't know how we're going to do this.
These guys should probably go all the way back to the back.
Put the kids on the desk there.
Sure. Send the kids around.
They'll just have an adult hold on to them, and they'll be okay.
Bring your children around the back.
You might scare them, Gacho, if you do that. You might scare them. You know, like Santa Claus, it doesn't always work.
Well, here's Will Carey. Pass them over. Yes, Mama.
This is not the first child he's handed over the counter, I assure you.
That's the old country. Take one with Lillian facing forward.
So the children are coming. Go up with the leaders. They know they're here to be.
We'll have them stand here.
Correct. We'll have them stand right here.
Yeah. Come up.
This is way too cool now.
Oh, you get to be up tall. That's my key.
We got one more.
Get one.
This is Louise.
Got one more country.
Yeah, we get one over here. Over here.
Okay.
You got it.
Okay.
You
got him. I got him.
Belly.
Okay.
Okay. There you go.
Great.
Finally, get somebody as tall as Jerry.
Do not fall.
Smile.
Great.
Are you smiling? Are you smiling?
There we go. Thank you. And they have presents to give us. The children have presents.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elise. I appreciate that. Thank you.
And Martin, you can give your pumpkin.
Thank you, Martin.
And shake hands. Okay.
I'll do it how Paul talks.
Alex, you can give your painting and shake hands.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Two of our kids are sick.
Start with
so
two, and I'll hand
them. Have the eyes one, and I'll show you hand for them.
Is there some pink on
there? Yeah, they're bringing some cake later on. They're bringing some.
Hey, guys, want to shake hands and get in the picture?
Okay.
Look at the and Brian. Brianna.
We can't put it up there, but they're going to put it on the front.
We'll tell them they'll take it.
Oh, yes, that's good.
Oh, they have to see them. Oh, that's a good idea.
Probably not a good one.
Okay. No, yes, I mean,
very good.
Probably need an XXL.
I can get it. If you got a 2XL, we'll do it later.
Okay, we'll do it later. Yeah. Jim already got it.
Thank you.
And here's your.
Oh, thank you.
We shall.
That's what Dan.
Thank you.
Oh,
you want to put one down?
Oh, I'll put EOC right under my angel.
I guess I have an extra. I'll give Dan.
Here's one hold like mine. The picture underneath your name.
Oh, will it hold this? Can you line that up under the? Yeah. You just bend that tab. Down. Grab it.
And would you like to say a few words,
yeah,
please?
I just wanted to
say... Oh, your name for the record.
Oh, my name is Lisa Delk, and I am the vice chair of the EOC Board of Commissioners, and I'm also the low-income resident representative for District 3. And I just wanted to thank you for this wonderful honor on behalf of EOC. It is a truly wonderful time for us to receive this proclamation, and I just want to introduce Biz, who is our director, and let her say a few words. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think only in San Luis Obispo would everybody say, go ahead and let's take a group picture. So thank you so much. That was unexpected on our part. And thank you to Lisa and Paul for being here with us today. And Jim Patterson, of course, represents all of you on the EOC board. And what I want to do is just spend a minute or two. I won't take a long time. But I want the whole Board of Supervisors to know that we are so appreciative of your participation over these last 40 years. When we go back in the records, every single term there is a member of the Board of Supervisors, which has an ongoing seat. But you have always, in all these years, had that very important county public policy voice. And we do greatly appreciate that participation. And with Jim now, he's just a very active member and has coordinated this for us today. I think the other area I wanted to focus on was that our public-private partnership, I believe to be one of the highest achieving partnerships of all the community action agencies that I have begun to know over my career across this country. We sit at the table together with the county government, of course, volunteers, all sectors of the community. But we have taken our relationship as the EOC and the County of San Luis Obispo to very unique, innovative, and creative programs. And I'm just going to list a couple of them. The reason we have the Head Start children here is Head Start was the very first program. And the health department actually did all the in-kind for the nurses way back in 1965 under Dr. Harper. And the board then did not want any money spent, but he found a way to do the in-kind part. And so our relationship began with the Head Start program and public health back in 1965. We have moved on to work together with a very large need in our community, the homeless program. We continue to work with the county in all aspects of that. The Safe System of Care with the Children's Services Network and every county department that serves children and families. CalWORKs and welfare reform came along, and we have the child care contract that serves together with the CalWORKs families and our subsidy children, 1,800 children a month. That's a lot of children getting quality care. And in the future, we look forward to the continuation of these projects, as well as a new project on the horizon called the Children's Assessment Center, which I know many of you are aware of. So on behalf of myself, but also the Board of Directors, we thank you. We thank our partners, and we have many partners in the audience, all the different divisions of the county that we work with. Even the county auditor, he and I sit together at the CHCCC board meetings, and he's a valuable member of that board. We want to thank your county staff in all the departments, and I also want to thank Mr. Edge, because we meet periodically each year and really try to strategize around the area of poverty. And, of course, Jim, we want to thank you, because you do represent the whole board for us during this term. On December 9th, the very day that the Board of Supervisors incorporated this nonprofit, we are having an open house. You'll be getting formal invitations. But please come by the Southwood office on December 9th from 3 to 5:30, and we'll have a little cake cutting ceremony around 4:30. Lastly, I couldn't do what I do without all the thousands of volunteers out there, but core staff representing every one of our departments and our board of directors. It's a great team. It's rewarding work. And we thank you for today, the photos, the paintings, and your gracious proclamation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wait a while, wait a while. I have one request to speak form Julia Miller.
Good morning, Julia Miller from the Children's Services Network. I wanted to congratulate EOC on behalf of the CSN. We couldn't do a lot of the things that we do without their participation and their very enthusiastic involvement. Biz, of course, has been a founding member and a driving force on CSN. We certainly appreciate all of her efforts and the efforts of all of her staff. So congratulations.
Thank you. Mr. Lenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Biz did a great job of thanking a lot of people on county staff and in this room. But one person she didn't thank that I think we all need to thank is the work that she does herself here. Not only has she been a great friend. Not only has she been a great personal friend, but she is a wonderful person to work with. And I just can't say enough about the good things she does. So if there's anyone that deserves extra accolades, it's Biz for all the extra effort that she does here today.
That's good.
Thank you. I had one of Mr. Ovid.
Thank you. She's having fun with these.
I know, yeah, I'm having fun with it, too.
Yeah, Jerry kind of stole it, but I was thinking the number of years that I've been involved around that with the city of Paso and here, and having gone back and look at the history of EOC and its points where it almost didn't make it because of various different reasons, I was going to say you're looking at the one person, Biz, who basically came in and took it from the bottom and brought it back up and has expanded it today. And I think it's the EOC is a definite proof that community-based organizations can deliver the necessary services that not that the government can't do. And I think we have to not only Biz, but, again, my thanks go because you absorbed in another organization that was needing some help at the time, and I think all the people that work for you do an excellent job in getting that done.
Okay. Mr. Shajan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to repeat what's been said here, Biz, but my experience with you goes beyond EOC with the numerous organizations. If it's related to healthcare and especially children's healthcare, you're always being there. You never say no. And the only thing that you have complained about, that's there's only 24 hours in a day. I wish there were more. Thank you for all your sincere, heartfelt efforts towards our community and the children.
Well, it's all been said now. So I have nothing else to say except, you know, I appreciate very much working with Biz. So you're great. Thank you very much. And we'll just keep moving forward. Okay. With that, I'll move on to the next presentation, which is Mr. Seebach. If you would come to the microphone, please. Well, and it gives me great pleasure to present this plaque. The Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting has been awarded to the County of San Luis Obispo by the Government Finance Officers Association of the United States and Canada, GFOA, for its Comprehensive Financial Reporting, CAFR. The Certificate of Achievement is the highest form of recognition in the area of governmental accounting and financial reporting, and its attainment represents a significant accomplishment by a government and its management. The award for financial reporting achievement is awarded to the individual designated by the government as primarily responsible for preparing the award-winning CAFR. In this, our government, it's Jerry Seebach, CPA, Auditor, Controller. If you'd come forward, Jerry.
I know.
I've been thinking this. If you would care to say something?
Oh, no. Not
you should never let a politician near a microphone with a room full of people. But
You still have to give your name for the record.
Jerry Seebach, Auditor Controller. I am proud to accept this on behalf of the county and my department. I am named on it, but it is a countywide effort, and we have a lot of people. It's not doesn't happen by accident. A lot of hard work in our financial staff, and not just our department, but Public Works, General Services, Treasurer, Tax Collector, and all of the departments have people that are helping us with this. And in my department, normally I would bring a couple of them down and let you see their faces, but I, you know what, they're awfully busy today. Cynthia Dummett was the one that was the point person on preparing our comprehensive report this last year, and she's very heavily involved in our EFS project phase two. In just a few weeks, we're going to be coming up with the human resources and payroll part of that, the second big rollout. And they are working diligently on that, a group of people led by Jim Erb and Julie Anderson. But downtown, we still have Bill Estrada, my assistant, is involved in everything we do. Lydia Kaur is our principal accountant auditor. She leads our general accounting group, and they all do a heck of a job, and I'm very proud of them. And it is something that doesn't come, as I said, by accident. It's a lot of hard work over many years, and with the support of your board, that we can provide good accounting and good reporting, and we're proud of that. So thank you for this plaque and the honor.
And thank you, Jerry, and your staff for all the good work that you do. With that, we will move on to public comment. I have one request to speak form for public comment this morning. David Dugan.
Dave Dugan, Los Osos. I remember a movie called The Mouse That Roared. This movie is about a very, very small country called the Duchy of Grand Fenwick, which declares war on the United States after being economically attacked by an affluent California Y consortium and being politically snubbed by the U.S. government. But the plan was to lose the war and to reap the benefits of a Marshall Plan and rebuild its economy. But like the best laid plans of mice and men that often go astray, they won the war. They won by capturing the Q-bomb. And, of course, the world powers feigned negotiation with them and then unsuccessfully tried to take the Q-bomb. You see, the Q-bomb is a weapon of mutually assured destruction. And if detonated, it would destroy the world. So the Duchy of Grand Fenwick finally, in the end, gets its way. A slow segue to the sleepy community of Los Osos. We, too, are under attack by special interest and government forces. But we had an election, a political war, and we meant to win this war, and we did win. But we are still beset by the powers that be, and they are still trying to force their will on this community. They are very afraid of our Q-bomb, Measure B, a weapon of mutually assured destruction. Measure B will act like a slow-motion bomb of time, destroying this region's economic viability. Slowly, the economic shocks will begin to move out of the region, houses won't sell, businesses will fail, and notes will come due. An ever-increasing speed outward, the destruction of fortunes tied to the overinflated real estate market in California will begin. Housing markets will devalue, and profit expectations will drop, and all that creative finances will start to tumble down, down, down. The Los Osos CSD negotiate in good faith. Sam Blakesley and the staff of the State Water Resource Control Board brokered a fair deal, but a political decision was made to derail this proposal. This proposal that showed a cheaper alternative system and environmentally preferred site is possible. But with Democrats and Gray Davis appointees on the board, and who knows who in the system, this proposal didn't have a snowball chance in hell. But the State Water Resource Control Board has a chance to defuse this bomb of time. If not, kaboom. But don't worry. Measure B is a slow-motion bomb of time. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. That was my last public comment request to speak. I see no one else coming forward, so with that I will close public comment and open it to public comment for the consent agenda. Mr. Eric Greening.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and I'm addressing B7, which is the meeting calendar proposed for 2006. And in general, it looks good, but I noticed the first 2 months of the year, January and February, there are 9 Tuesdays, and you meet 4 times. And in the last few meetings, I've heard an awful lot of things deferred to right after the first of the year. And I hope none of them get lost through the cracks. Of course, my particular concern is one you heard about a month ago in a great hurry, which was the hazard mitigation plan, emergency response plan, earthquake plan, and tsunami plan. After a tsunami of 58 speakers addressing the Keucus Hillside standards, everyone acknowledged that these plans and emergency response in general needed a more thorough review and going over, and it was promised shortly after the first of the year. I know you also are going to have several appeals coming out of recent meetings that have happened in other bodies, and so it does seem that you're probably going to have more than 4 meetings worth of material to deal with in January and February unless you kick a lot of things back into March and April. If you have to do that, I would suggest you be upfront about it and prioritize these things publicly so that people will know when to expect them to come up. I would also suggest, however, that your normal tradition of not meeting on 5th Tuesdays is not based on anything except tradition, and that at the very least you might consider adding January 31st to your meeting dates, because, as I say, I just see an awful lot coming down on you on the 4 puny meetings you have in the first 2 months of the year, and I hate to see you here half the night. Catch you later. Thanks.
Thank you for your comments, Eric. That's my last request to speak form on the consent agenda, and I see no one coming forward, so I will close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Mr. Ovett, do you have any comments on consent?
Yes, ma'am. Item B10.
You find my pen so I can write this down. Mr. Patterson?
B7, B10 comments.
Mr. Lenthal?
No, ma'am.
Mr. Ashajan?
Thank you.
And I have just a comment on added item B18. So, Mr. Ovett?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. B10 is a request for this publication, which I don't have an issue with that procedure. My issue is somewhat with the subject of that, and it's kind of ironic that this is being put forward here today for a potential meeting in February the 7th, and yet on our agenda this afternoon we're discussing those items, but not for action, but only to receive and file. And I'm concerned that this has the connotation that we are giving the carte blanche to continue to go forward when I don't think we've really had an opportunity to sit down and discuss these. I know that they're in action right now. Mr. Dana Lilly is running those. There's committee action that's going on. And my request to the board is possibly hold this off until we have some more positive feedback. It doesn't delay anything. It doesn't have a problem with it. But it would necessarily need to be done before we have the hearing in the 7th. We have done this for other general plan changes. Predominantly, they've been on almost the same agenda as the first hearing. And that's my concern, is that I know there's a lot of issues about this housing, and there are various adoptions of these different amendments that affect different groups and how they're going to respond to them. And I know this board hasn't sat down and really dealt with them other than looking through the housing element. So my request would be either to hold this off till we have the discussion this afternoon on the item, which is, I think, D1, is it this afternoon, and not part of the consent calendar right now.
It's the last item on the agenda, so I would assume it's this afternoon.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you want staff to respond to this at all at this point, at the end of all of our comments?
That's fine. It was just a concern I have because we really haven't gotten into these, and I know it's in committee action right now, and that's a concern I have. And I think from what I hear, I know I have problems with ones, but there's some others like the conversion of condominiums we've got or conversion okay. of mobile homes. We're getting a lot of feedback on these things.
Okay. At the end of it, maybe we can have staff comment. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, regarding B7 and the calendar for the board next year, I do share Mr. Greening's concerns. Over the course of the last several weeks, we've actually deferred a number of things to come back to the board right after the first of the year, and I was just curious how that was set up and if staff thinks we can indeed deal with the number of issues that we have deferred until January and February, if we'll be able to get all of those, along with our regular business, covered in just those four meetings.
Oh, do you want to wait till after all the comment, and then we'll... And I have to comment that until we have the break, this thing doesn't work. So you're going to have to... If you want to comment, you have to wave your arms at me. So, Mr. Lenthal, you didn't have any.
No, ma'am.
Mr. Hushajan, you didn't have any. I just wanted to comment on item B18. This is the establishment of programs for perinatal substance abuse and the other program to develop a children's treatment center, and this has been the result of a long involved effort, and for some reason, and Dr. Thomas probably will want to comment on this, we have a real problem with alcohol abuse in this county, particularly as it relates to pregnant women. So Dr. Thomas, did you want to comment? Because this is the end of our... This is the time for staff comments on our items, so go for it.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson Bianchi. The note that over the past year, as we follow 2,600 deliveries in San Luis Obispo County, we screened 1,300 pregnant women. 18% of those were smoking cigarettes. 35% of those were drinking alcohol. And 11% were using both alcohol and cigarettes. This is the highest that the research group that we're working with has seen. That includes Camden, New Jersey. That includes Alameda County. That includes Chicago, Illinois. We do have a huge issue in this county of ours, this is an attempt to not only continue and increase the amount of screening we do and do what we call warm handoffs. So we screen, we assess, we make a warm handoff referral, and we get women into treatment. The long-term, even small amounts of alcohol, some studies say even one drink a week can increase issues in as a child is maturing. With brain development. And so the screening and then the development of a children's assessment, we want to start, prevent the problem before it happens with screening, assessment, referral, and treatment of the pregnant woman. We also want to work collaboratively with multiple county departments, outside funding agencies, and with nonprofits to put together a child assessment and treatment center. So this is a contract to allow that planning and the consultation needed to move forward. And there's a leadership team, which includes Mr. Edge, Ms. Bianchi, Supervisor Asajan, and members of a number of county departments and nonprofits working on this. So we certainly hope to bring this forward for fruition, and I certainly appreciate the input and efforts of our county administrator, Mr. Edge, and Supervisor Asajian and Chairperson Bianchi.
Thank you. The Children's Center for these little guys that are, you know, are born, 0 to 5 years is extremely important in helping them overcome any brain damage that may have occurred prenatally, undoubtedly did occur. So the 0 to 5 center is extraordinarily important, and I'm really pleased to see it on it, sort of on its way. We'll get there. So with that, we'll go back to item B7 and then up to B10. Mr. Edge.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
And your screen is, my screen is blank.
There's a certain truth to old Parkinson's law that the amount of work you do expands to fill the available time. You have in the currently scheduled meetings that we have, which run through the end of January, you, as your board knows and the public may not know, we schedule in advance 300 minutes, so that's a 5 hours of hearing times for any given Tuesday. And of that 300 minutes over the next six meetings, we have a total not already budgeted in advance. We have 0, minus 15, 0, minus 10, 0, that's January 10th, and we do still have 30 minutes left on January 24th. You're already pretty well packed up, as that suggests. You know, the reality is you get appeals, and appeals take a lot of time for your board. If you wanted to have a meeting on the 31st of January, we could certainly arrange that. Now would be the time to tell us to set that up. Whether or not it's critical, based on Eric's question, is hard to say. It's we will accommodate on the agendas those items that need to be accommodated from a time-sensitive perspective, and if you are busy, then you vote to go past five and you do that. And I can't guarantee that if you set up the 31st of January as a meeting, that would mean you won't be going past five on the already scheduled meetings in January and February.
Okay, we will have to think about this, Eric. So we can add, subtract, multiply, and divide before January 1st, can't we?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The current rules we have is that we can call a special meeting, yeah, and it has dates of notification in that and what the item's agenda. And all too often, if we've looked through the last year, I know when we reduced it down the first time, it's got to be 8 years or better, there was discussion about doing it then, and yet we still have meetings where we have half a day. And the scheduling is the problem, and trying to get people to get their reports or get their stuff ready to get done by the time it's scheduled for is also another difficult point. But we will be jammed up like that, and then all of a sudden we'll break open and we'll have a whole lot of them. So I think the issue of calling special meetings and that is available to us.
And that is a great comment, Madam Chair, because if we make it a regularly scheduled meeting, then that provides a date for, let's see who's here, Cammie and all of her good friends over in planning to schedule appeals for. On the other hand, if you make a special meeting, then they don't have the opportunity to schedule those appeals, and so we can focus on other things that you feel the need to have a meeting for.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comments.
Yeah. And I would also like to point out that in March we have four consecutive meetings, so, you know, if we do need to catch up a little bit, we can.
March has four consecutive meetings, and added to those are the first, how many in April? Well, not that many in April. So with that, does staff want to comment on B7? Would staff like to comment on B7 and why it's scheduled on the consent agenda now?
You just did.
You mean B10?
B10.
I'm sorry. B10.
Thank you, Chairperson Bianchi. Dana Lilly with your planning staff. Is this working? Yes. Item B10. We don't have any problem holding that to the afternoon if your board would like to do that. We had heard from a number of people during housing element update and preliminary work on the housing programs that a lot of developments are coming through. We aren't requiring affordable housing of them. Is there any way to give applicants notice that we might be applying new requirements once they're adopted? And so that is the intent of this notice. But if your board wants to postpone it to the afternoon, that's okay with the planning department.
Yes.
Personally, I'd like to see us move forward with this. It's long overdue, in my opinion, and all this notice does is put people on notice that we are in the process of moving through and adopting ordinances relative to the housing issue. And I think the sooner that we get it published, the better.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, Mr. Ovid.
Thank you. I have one disagreement with this particular thing, is that there is nothing that anyone can adopt to any kind of process that's in the process now. We haven't finished the white papers on it yet. There's still discussion amongst the committee that's dealing with this. We don't have a formal ordinance that's been presented. So by doing this, just to let people know we're going to apply it later on, doesn't fit. Because the issue is we do not have the ordinances, nor do we know what direction those specific ordinances are going. And there's five, I think, that are listed here, but yet when you go in to the discussion this afternoon, we have 15 areas that we're looking at, and we may want to get involved in something else. I know the two that I've heard the most on are, one is inclusionary zoning, and the second is the conversion of mobile home parks. And that's just the language that's coming out from people who've been at these meetings or have been knowledgeable. It really doesn't serve a purpose to put this out there because we don't have anything concrete to apply to any kind of thing that's in the process at this time.
Well, if it doesn't make any difference to staff, my suggestion is that we hold approval of item B10 off until the very end of the day, after item B, whatever it is.
D1.
Yeah. Okay, if that's okay. So that's what we'll do. So when we make a motion on the consent agenda, which is next.
I'll move approval of the balance of the consent agenda items with
B10.
With the added
18.
And
the change
leaving
to
out
eight.
Number 10.
Do we have a second?
Second,
sir. May we have a roll call, please?
Madam Chair?
I forgot.
Sorry,
Mr. Lenthal would like an explanation of item B16.
No, actually, I was just going to make a comment on B16. And since I see representatives from the city out there, specifically John Moss from the Utilities Department, having seen that neighborhood evacuated twice in the last 30 years for fires, the city's building a much-needed and pretty larger water tank. In this time of preparedness, we're also having a fire hydrant that was not in the mention of the specific details over here. And I just want to thank you for doing that. It's been long overdue. And I hope we don't ever need it, but if we do, it's nice to know that we have that resource out there. And so, John, thank you for your help.
Okay. With that, we will have a roll call.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yes. We're going to take a break a little early this morning, and we will. And the reason for it is that staff needs to fix this computer thing. It's driving me bonkers. So with that, we will return at 10 o'clock.
Well, let me see what happens if I shut it down. Yeah, we'll be here. Yes.
fixing the glitch that we had up here in our technology. Thank you very much. I knew they could do it if we took a break. With that, may we have an introduction of item C1, please.
Item C1 is a hearing to consider a resolution imposing revised road impact fees for the community of Babel Beach. This is in the 3rd District. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Yes, may we have a staff report, please?
Yes. Can we get it up there?
There we go.
I'm Rosemarie Gaglione, an engineer with the Department of Public Works, and I'm here to present to you the 2005 update to the Avila Circulation Study. This is the Avila Road Impact Fee Area. There was approximately $1.4 million in the account at the end of fiscal year 2004-05. There were no road impact fee appeals in the Avila area during the last fiscal year. Current projects we're working on that have road impact fee funding are the San Luis Bay Drive Bridge Replacement Project and the signal at San Luis Bay Drive. We have finished preliminary engineering. We have our environmental permits, and we are in the right-of-way phase. And projects we're working on that are not funded by road impact fees, part of the widening on Avila Beach Drive for bike lanes is not covered by road impact fees. We are constructing this in conjunction with the bridge replacement project, but we have other funding for that. And how the annual updates are calculated, as you know, we take the updates and we base our increases on the Caltrans 12-month construction cost index, and the increase is applied to the cost of construction with contributions from other sources held constant. And what we did, we make adjustments to the program cost based on our funding sources. So if we get more money from Caltrans through the HBRR program, we go ahead and show that, and we would decrease the amount taken from road impact fees. We also make adjustments to individual projects based on updated information. So if we have a recent estimate, that's what we're going to use and not just use the standard construction cost index. So the Department of Public Works has secured highway bridge replacement and rehabilitation money, regional state highway account money, and transportation enhancement activities money for the San Luis Bay Drive Bridge project to add to the road impact fees. So that means that for a $4.7 million project, less than $725,000 is coming out of road impact fees. And the cost estimates for our road impact fee eligible projects increased by $1.1 million, and these changes resulted in an increase to the peak hour trip cost of 29.1%. Now, there's a difference between the amounts that went out in the notice of hearing and also what was in the draft report that I put out. In the draft, I had the fees going up 34%, and they're actually going up 29.1%. I received the account balances in a different format than I usually do, and I failed to notice that they weren't complete historically. And fortunately, we have a great system of checks and balances known as Brian Chapman, and he caught the error and fixed that. So we ended up with a smaller increase than expected. So currently, our peak hour, the cost for a peak hour trip for residential is $2,071, and we are recommending that be increased to $2,673. Hotels per room on the average are running $1,263, and we're proposing that go up to $1,630. And multiple family dwellings per unit currently is $1,284, and we're proposing that go up to $1,657. We presented this to the Avila Valley Community Advisory Council in their October meeting, and they unanimously approved the report. So staff recommends that your board adopt the annual fee update, adopt the revised cost estimates, and adopt the resolution increasing the fee schedule. And that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
Are there any questions of staff? Would someone please push a button just so I can tell this thing works? Yes, good, thank you. Thank you very much. There are no questions. Thank you. And I have no request to speak forms. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to address the board? I see no one coming forward, so we'll bring it back to the board for discussion and or motion. Mr. Lemthal.
I'll make sure my letter. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes, there's your microphone.
One of the difficulties is that we have a complex
complex project and you're trying to tell people how to raise funds, and you just have a legal smile on your face, so it's becoming more difficult.
Wow.
Start again.
Nope.
It's not noticed. Okay, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. I'll start over. One of the difficult challenges that we have, especially in government, is how do we raise fees, let people know there's good value, how do we get buy-in and support from our community? I want to compliment Rosemary for doing that, because when she presented this to the AVAC Commission in October, there was not only unanimous support, but she took a real complex issue and broke it down into bite-sized pieces. So that is something I think is worth mentioning, publicly thanking you not only for the work that you do, but for the outstanding job that you've done communicating where this money is going to go, how we got to where we are right now, and what we need to do in the future. So with that, I move that we approve this motion.
We've had a motion and a second. May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Linthon?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Ms. Bianchi?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
And thank you. With that, we will move on to item C2. May we have an introduction, please?
Item C2 is a hearing to consider the 2005 update of the county bikeways plan and submittal of a resolution to apply for grant funding for the bicycle transportation account program. All districts' recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
May we have a staff report, please?
Hi, I'm Ryan Chapman with Public Works, and I'm here to present the 2005 county bikeways plan. The purpose of the bikeways plan is to provide direction for bikeway improvements in the county right-of-way. It's geared toward commuter users and connection to community hubs and trails, and allows the county to apply for grant funding from several sources. The Bicycle Advisory Committee was established to develop the bikeways plan in 1994 as a Brown Act committee consisting of 10 members and focuses on community concerns related to bicycling. The legal requirements of the plan are outlined in the California Bicycle Transportation Act of the Streets and Highways Code, and it's required to have a list of proposed bikeways, demographic data, project expenditures, among other items. Since the last update, we've updated the plan to reflect the most current census data. We've updated the plan to be consistent with the community circulation plans and to be consistent with the county road policy for priority and its expenditures. The goals of the plan are to construct more bikeways, increase education for both cyclists and motorists, and increase maintenance in existing county bikeways. The Bicycle Transportation Account Program is one of the funding sources that is available. It requires the current bikeways plan, and it pays for up to 90% of a project. This year, it will be disbursing $5 million. It also ranks projects based on benefit to commuters. We would like your board to approve a resolution that would allow Public Works to apply for grant funding on Vineyard Drive and 22nd Street, Oceano. Vineyard Drive would be from Bennett Way to Bethel Road, and it would connect an existing Class 1 bikeway to a proposed Class 2 bikeway that will be built in 2008 with a intersection project. 22nd Street Oceano would be from the Pike to Highway 1, and it would connect two existing Class 2 bikeways. Staff recommendation is that you approve the 2000 update of the county bikeways plan, approve the resolution directing Public Works to apply for transportation account money.
And that concludes your report?
That concludes my report.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Linthal has a question.
Oh, my light was still on.
Oh, it's still on. Mr. Shajian has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Needless to say, I'm supportive of what you folks are doing. My only question is, in areas such as Oceano, when we add bike lanes, are we taking away from drainage areas, and how are we addressing that issue? Because though some of those roads are pretty narrow, and it has been a problem in the past, and at one time we did reverse our decision to add a bikeway because of the neighborhood's concern that we're taking drainage away from their neighborhood by adding more blacktop. How are we addressing that issue?
On this particular bikeway, we do not have a plan designed yet. When we do develop it, drainage would be of critical concern, and we would not be doing anything to increase any problem with drainage.
Okay.
Mr. Flynn.
Dave Flynn with Public Works Department. In this particular case on 22nd Street, what we have done at a previous board action is look at revising the road standards that narrows the lanes down through residential collector streets like 22nd Street to install the bike lanes and salvage parking and try to not create an overly large roadway. So we're trying to be sensitive about making roadways that fit the neighborhood and would address parking and drainage needs.
Thank you. Again, I'm supportive of what you're trying to do. I just want you keeping your minds as you plan, have the drainage issues in an area that's flooding is very easy to happen. Thank you.
Yeah, I have a question. I was reading the bike plan, and on page, well, their page 28, our page 41, there's a really good comment about using promotional campaigns to reach the motorists' target audience. Well, you know, I have this real problem with bicyclists on Highway 1, particularly when tour buses or cattle trucks or some other large vehicle is coming in the opposite direction and the bicyclists are in my lane, travel lane. Is it possible to insert a paragraph? Is it too late to insert a paragraph in this document that inverts that as well, an extra one? It says, using promotional campaigns to reach the bicyclist target audience. The campaign should be tailored to alerting cyclists to the presence of vehicles around them. Is it too late to do that? Because I sure would like to have a paragraph in here.
That is something we could add.
Okay. Thank you. I have no request to speak forms from the public. Is there anyone from the public who wants to address the board on this issue? I see no one coming forward, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board for...
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
And does that motion include the addition of that extra paragraph, or does it need to?
I don't think we have a choice but to include that.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, yes. So may we have an introduction of item C3, please?
Item C3 is a consideration of a proposal to establish or alter boundaries of agricultural preserves. It's one proposal to also establish a farmland security zone and one correction to a previously approved amendment to an ag preserve for the following properties: Carrasco Properties, Fetzer Vineyard, Joseph and Jamie Keys, Alvin A.G., James Cushman, Paso Robles Vineyard, Brave Oak Vineyards, and Michael Grissom.
May we have a staff report, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Warren Hug, Department of Planning and Building. This is the second part of the annual cycle of agricultural preserve requests that we're bringing to your board. If you approve these, they will result in a total of 1,765 acres being added to the Williamson Act program. I will note that the first three items were continued from your last meeting. There will be individual staff reports and hearings on the various items, and Terry Waller and Andrea Miller will give those reports. Thank you.
And we will take these one. Do we take each one individually, right?
Yes, you have.
Because I have a request to speak for them on one. Okay. And the staff report, please. Yes.
I'm sorry. Also, I think we do tentative motions on these and then do one final motion at the end, or just motions on them automatically go forward. Thank you.
Maybe we have a staff report, please. Or are you waiting for the PowerPoint to heat up? There we go.
All set.
A little cold this morning.
Good morning, Chairperson and members of the board. Terry Waller, planning staff. The first item is file number AGP 2004-00027, a proposal by Carrasco Properties LP to alter and expand the boundaries of an agricultural preserve and establish a farmland security zone to allow the applicant to enter into a farmland security zone contract. The project site consists of 160 acres within the agricultural land use category and is located at the southwestern corner of Highway 46 and Geneseo Road, approximately 3 miles east of Paso Robles. The site is located in the El Pomar Estrella planning area. The property is cultivated with irrigated vineyard, and the predominant soil type is Class 4. The property qualifies for the program with 134 acres of irrigated vineyard. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee recommended 8-1 in favor of the proposal. The Planning Commission considered the item twice. The first time, the Planning Commission voted 3-2 to recommend denial of the proposal due to the exclusion of a portion of the property from the contract because of the applicant's desire to construct a winery in the future on this portion. The second time, the Planning Commission considered the item. With 4 members present, they voted 3-1 in favor of the proposal as proposed, with a minimum parcel size of 40 acres and a term of 20 years. That concludes the presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions of staff? I see no light, so with that, I will open it to the public. I have one request to speak form, Susan Harvey.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak. Susan Harvey, and I'm the president of Paso Watch. Paso Watch asks that you deny the approval of the application by Carrasco Properties, LLP, for a Williamson Act contract. The applicant has submitted an application that removes 20-acre parcel from the 160 acres. He states he has concerns about the effects of the Laird bill. He has stated to staff that he has intentions of building a winery on the property. The 20-acre parcel fronts on Highway 46 East. Wineries are allowed under the Laird Bill and Williamson Act. Even though the current rules of procedure for the Agricultural Preserve Review Committee do not specifically prevent this kind of set-aside, we believe it is not in keeping with the intentions of the Williamson Act or the Laird Bill, and it's a bad precedent to set. In keeping with the intent of the Williamson Act, Santa Barbara County does not allow such carve-outs. This is the first such attempt to skirt the provisions of the Laird Bill in this manner in this county. Agricultural Preserve Review Committee member Irv McMillan raised these questions when the issue was before the committee and voted against approval. The Planning Commission voted to deny the application for the same reason. You have the discretion to deny this application. Your vote to deny the application by Carrasco Properties would make an important statement about your commitment to the integrity of the Williamson Act and the Laird Amendment. We believe that the Agricultural Preserve Review Committee would benefit from and applaud your leadership on this issue. I believe that the rules of procedure are being reviewed right now, and I would ask that you deny this application until this question can be reviewed by the Agricultural Review Committee. I think that since it had never come up before, it's something that they hadn't really addressed in their rules of procedure. And I'd ask also that you might want to get an opinion from the Department of Conservation regarding this kind of action. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. I have no more requests to speak forms on this item, so I will close it to the public, and I'm asking staff if they would care to respond. If they would.
That's the applicant. I'm not sure you have the applicant. Just go.
Probably witness.
I'm sorry. You didn't fill out a request to speak form, so I didn't know you wanted
to speak. I'm sorry. Can I still speak, Madam Chair?
Sure. And your name for the record.
Yes, good morning, Madam Chairperson, members of the board. My name is Joe Carrasco. My mother and I own this parcel of land. And one of the reasons that we left this particular piece out of the Williamson Act is we already have an existing winery permit. We plan to start building maybe June or May or June of 2006. You know, I talked to staff, Terry Waller, and, you know, we sat down together and we decided to leave it out because we have the existing permit, and we thought, well, maybe there might be some different things in the Williamson Act that won't, you know, that would prevent us from doing what we already have permitted to do. And it would just convolute everything. And, you know, my major emphasis is agriculture. You know, we're not going to go out there and build bed and breakfasts or anything like that. We just want to build the winery. I own all the property that's adjacent to this land except for the houses on one side.
Okay.
Thank you.
And thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else from the public? Okay, with that, I will close it to the public and bring it back to staff for your comments, and then I have a comment. Well, I have other comments here, too.
Certainly. The applicant actually requested that this remain out. This is the way the application came in. And we researched it with County Council and with the Williamson Act, and it was determined that there was nothing in the Act that would make it illegal or a violation to go ahead and exclude portions of it. It's simply silent on that issue. And I believe these situations are handled differently from county to county. It is true, I did call Santa Barbara County, and they do not allow exclusions of this type. In this case, it's kind of six of one, half a dozen of the other, because he already has the land use permit approved. It actually is allowed under the rules of procedure, so even if the area were left in, he still would be able to go ahead and construct this, and he wouldn't be in violation of his contract. I think mainly what we're seeing a bit of is some uncertainty about how the Laird bill will be applied. And because of this uncertainty, some people, have some apprehensions about some of the additional things that they want to do with their property. And as we know, there's a number of contracted properties that have wineries on them with irrigated vineyards. So it's not unusual to see this. It's just a matter of the applicant being somewhat unsure of how the Laird bill may be applied in the future.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions of staff. Did you actually, you said you looked into the Williamson Act to determine whether or not carving out a section of a parcel was allowed. Did you discuss that with the Department of Conservation? Is that who you consulted at the state?
I didn't just discuss that with them directly, but I don't believe that there's any, that they have an immediate concern with it because it's allowed in the Act. If it's consistent with the Act, they didn't express a concern with it.
Okay.
We spoke with counsel. That's who I researched it with.
Yeah. Mr. Waller, you did mention that wineries are allowable on Williamson Act parcels, and Mr. Carrasco mentioned that they already have a permit to construct a winery. Would including that parcel in the Williamson Act in any way delay the construction of the winery? Would it add additional restrictions or criteria or anything that would keep them from moving forward with the construction of that winery?
I don't believe so. It's allowed under the rules of procedure, and it's allowed under the Williamson Act. And whether or not the small exclusion occurred in the contract was probably immaterial in the long run when it comes to that.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Robit?
No, I'm just going to make a motion to approve.
Well, I have a comment, then you can make a motion. But no, I'm going to support this mainly because I've always had a very uncomfortable feeling about having a winery on Williamson Act properties because the county loses the tax dollars. And if this piece is carved out for the winery, it will not be under Williamson Act contract. It will be under, it won't be under anything. It'll be regular
agriculture
development property. So I'm going to support this for that reason. Okay, Mr. Patterson.
I would like to comment, though, that I do have grave concerns about the precedent-setting nature of this. I'm afraid that if we start allowing parcels to be carved up and parts of them entered into the Act and parts of them not, that we lose our control over what does occur on those properties that aren't preserved. And I just think that we ought to revisit the rules, as other counties have done, and not allow the parceling per segmenting of parcels, and so I won't support this.
Hey, Mr. Ovid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say this, to me, does not set a precedent because each one of these are individually investigated and individually ruled on, and every ag preserve I've ever seen come through, they all have different issues upon them. The situation that's left here is that you still have the ag preserve and the land behind it, and you have this in agricultural land and with an agricultural production unit being put on there. And again, I'll repeat my motion to approve.
I'll second that.
May we have a – it's a tentative motion?
No.
It's final motion.
Okay. Is this a roll call? Roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
No.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. May we have an introduction of item B?
Good morning.
C3B.
Good morning, Chairperson Bianchi, members of the board, Andrea Miller, County Planning. Item C3B is file number AGP 2004-00028. This is a proposal by Fetzerd Vineyard to establish an agricultural preserve to enable the applicant to enter into a land conservation contract. The project site is approximately 632.4 acres within the agricultural land use category and is located on Union Road approximately 7 miles east from the city of Paso Robles. The site is in the El Pomar Area Planning Area. This property is cultivated with irrigated vineyard and grazing. The predominant soil types are class 4, non-irrigated. The property qualifies for the program with over 427 acres of irrigated vineyard. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 80 acres and a term of 20 years. This concludes staff's presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions of staff? I see none. I have no request to speak forms on this issue. Is there anyone from the public, including the applicant, who wishes to come forward? And I see no one, so I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board for discussion or action.
Move approval, Madam Chair.
Second.
May we have a roll call?
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
And this was a tentative motion?
No, none of these are tentative.
Final.
Okay, these are final.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the other ones that are tentative. Yes. May we have an introduction of C3C, please.
Andrea Miller, County Planning again. This is file number AGP 2004-00021. This is a proposal by Joseph and Jamie Keyes to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve, rescind an existing contract, and simultaneously enter into a new contract to reflect lot line adjustment SUB 2004-00321. The project site is approximately 1,125 acres within the agricultural land use category. It's located at the intersection of Ranchita Canyon Road and Von Dolan Road, approximately 6 miles north of the city of Paso Robles. And this is in this site is within the El Pomar Estrella Planning Area. The property is currently used for grazing. The predominant soil types are class 4 and 6. The land under the new contract will qualify for the program because it consists of over 100 acres of soil well-suited as rangeland. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission have recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 160 acres and the remaining term of the existing contract, which is 10 years. That concludes staff's presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
I see no names on my little screen here. So I assume there are no questions. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to address the board? So I see no one coming forward. I have no request to speak. I'll close it to the public. I should get a tape recorder that says that. I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board for discussion or action.
Move for approval.
Second.
We have a roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. May we have an introduction of item C3D, please?
Andrea Miller, County Planning. This file number is AGP 2004-00025. This is a proposal by Alvin Algie to alter the boundaries of an existing ag preserve and contract on approximately 169 acres by adding an adjoining half-acre parcel under the same ownership. The project site is approximately 1/2 acre within the agricultural land use category. It is located along La Panza Road at the intersection of La Panza and Little Farm Road. It is approximately 1 mile northeast of the community of Creston, and this as well as in the El Pomar Area Planning Area. This half-acre property is being added, is currently vacant, but may be cultivated with irrigated row crops in the near future. The predominant soil type is class 4, and if it's irrigated, it is a class 1. The site qualifies for the program as an addition to an existing agricultural preserve and contract according to the rules of procedure, which provides for the following. A property owner under contract who acquires adjacent parcels of any size may add this land by amendment of an existing agricultural preserve and contract. The contract amendment is to recognize the remaining term of the original contract, but in no event is less than 10 years. The property qualifies for the program because it is an addition to an existing agricultural preserve and contract according to the rules of procedure. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission have recommended a minimum approval with a minimum parcel size of 80 acres and the remaining term of the existing contract, which is 10 years. That concludes my presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I see no lights, so there are Mr. Patterson.
Move approval. Second.
Well, wait a minute. I do have to open it to the public. Even though there is no one from the public here, I have to open it to the public. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to address the board on this issue? Seeing no one, I'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Mr. Patterson.
Move approval of staff's recommendation.
Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Shajian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovent.
Aye.
Mr. Linthal.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes. May we have an introduction of item C3E, please?
This is a file number AGP 2005-00008. It's a proposal by James Cushman to alter and expand the boundaries of an adjacent agricultural preserve to include this site to enable the landowner to enter into a land conservation contract. The project site consists of 78 acres within the agricultural land use category and is located at 1515 Willow Creek Road, approximately 5.5 miles northwest of Templeton. The site is located in the Adelaida planning area. The property is cultivated with 12 acres of irrigated vineyard, has 27.5 acres suitable for dry farming, and 38.5 acres suitable for rangeland. The soil types range from class 2 irrigated to class 6 soils that are well suited as rangeland. The property qualifies for the program with mixed agricultural uses of sufficient acreage to meet the test for mixed-use properties and the rules of procedure under Appendix E. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 160 acres and a term of 20 years. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Are there any questions? I see no lights, so must not be any questions. I'll open it to the public. Is there anyone from the public who would? I see no one coming forward. I have no request to speak for them, so I'll close to the public and bring it back to the board for
approval, Madam Chair.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Ovent?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. May we have an introduction of item C3F, please?
Andrea Miller, County Planning. This is file number AGP 2004-00022. This is a proposal by Paso Robles Vineyard to establish an agricultural preserve to enable the applicant to enter into land conservation contract. The site consists of approximately 808 acres within the agricultural cluster. And the site is located in the agricultural land use category along Lynn Road, adjacent to the city of Paso Robles.
Lynn Road.
The site is in the El Palmar Stereo Planning and Salinas River planning areas. The property is cultivated with irrigated vineyards and grazing lands. The predominant soil types are class 2, 3, and 4. The property qualifies for the program with over 527 acres of irrigated vineyard. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum size of 80 acres and a term of 10 years. That concludes staff's presentation.
Are there any questions of staff? I see no lights, so with that, I will open it to the public. I have no request to speak forums, and no one is getting up, so I'll
I know they're debating on who's going to get to speak.
Oh, I thought they were here for the next item. Excuse me.
My name's Neil Olson. I live at 3161 Linnae Road, which is right across the road from this vineyard. I'm not here, I want to say first, to protest. I'm here for clarification and to make some comments. This vineyard is planted right up against the city limits. And at that time and now there were subdivisions being planted adjacent to this property. What I want to make sure is that if this is put into the Ag Preserve under a conservation contract, that the restrictions or the requirements for the adjacent properties are not increased from what they are under the regular agriculture subdivision boundary restrictions. There are excessive clear areas requested now, as far as I'm concerned, and if that should be increased because of these land conservation acts, I think that would be unjust. I think personally that these open space should be on the vineyard, not on the adjacent property. I know properties in Paso Robles where the clear areas around the vineyard are more acres than the vineyard themselves, and that's confiscating the personal property rights to build on those properties. What I'm talking about is a building free area. What I want to, I know you don't know today, but I want to make sure that if somebody could tell me if this alters the requirements in any way as far as agriculture versus subdivision. Whether it makes the restrictions and the clear areas greater. I think the ag preserves are a great thing. And they have for many years done a good deed for the county and for the farmers. They're a good thing. But this particular one happens to be right next to our property, which we are doing a subdivision on. And I just I'm interested to see if putting it into the reserves puts more restrictions on the adjoining properties.
Okay, thank you very much, and we'll have staff answer your questions at the conclusion of public comment.
Very good, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Greening.
I'm Eric Greening. I didn't file a slip. I wasn't expecting to speak on this one, but I just hope that whatever the gentleman is asking for, if it has anything to do with something that's not in front of you now, you can't take action on it. It sounds like he's asking for exception to the buffer standards or the right to farm ordinance on adjacent properties, and that's not in front of you. So I just would hope for some clarity on what's being asked for, and I don't think it's relevant to this item here. Thank you.
It was just clarification. Mr. Ovid?
Yeah, I was going to say that the properties that...
Mr. Vaughn wishes to make a comment. And then at the end of that, I'll ask staff, assuming that nobody else comes forward, I'll ask staff for clarification of the ag buffer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom Vaughn here representing the owners. Again, I think that perhaps what Mr. Olson was referring to could be a buffer situation from an ag preserve, which I don't believe the ag commissioner would actually impose. It's from the use, is my understanding. Perhaps staff could clarify that.
I was going to ask them to clarify that.
At any rate, I'm here to ask for approval of this. This is in order to complete the final map. It's a condition of the ag preserve or of the actual ag cluster project that was approved by your board. So I'm here to answer any other questions you may have.
I see no questions, so thank you for your comments. Now, is there anyone else who wants to speak on this item? Okay, I'm going to close it to the public and bring it back to staff for clarification.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. I believe what the gentleman, Mr. Olson, was referring to was whether ag buffers would be required on adjacent property due to this property being put in preserve and under contract. And the answer to that question is no. It's not based on the application of ag buffers is not based on whether the property is in preserve and under contract. It's based on proximity to existing or potential agricultural use. And the county's ag buffer policy does require that the buffers go on the adjacent non-agricultural property, not on the agricultural property. But if I understand the geography correctly here, the adjacent property to the west is in the city of Paso Robles. And it will be the city's responsibility to impose agricultural buffers as they find appropriate for CEQA mitigation or other purposes. I believe our county agricultural commissioner does recommend buffers to other jurisdictions, but it will be up to those jurisdictions to implement them.
Thank you for that clarification. This is District 1, so I assume Mr. Ovitt...
I know. Am I still light on? Go ahead.
I assume Mr. Ovitt wanted to make a motion, but Mr. Patterson wants to make a comment.
Ask a question, staff.
Okay.
Do you know if the county currently has a memorandum of agreement or understanding with Paso Robles relative to ag buffers? Because my concern is that if we don't, then... subdivision right next to a viable vineyard could potentially impact the operation of that vineyard.
Mr. Patterson, I don't know if the county or the Ag Commissioner's office has a formal agreement, but I do know that we review projects in adjacent jurisdictions. We comment on environmental impact reports. We indicate recommendations. When I say we, I mean the county as a whole. You know, the particular affected department, planning would, as well as Ag Commissioner. What has transpired in this particular case, I believe this is, you know, Mr. Olson's property, also the Chandler Ranch is in this vicinity as well. I know that we have been participating in some level of review, but I don't know what the exact nature of it is, and unless possibly Mr. Waller or someone else might know.
No. Mr. Ovitt?
I'm just going to say this is part of the purple belt the city's trying to find. And I don't know that there is any memorandum of understanding with the city. The city would look at it from an environmental review status. But for the agriculture preserve and to move this along, I would make the motion to approve Paso Robles Vineyard's request.
Do we have a second?
Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. May we have an introduction of item C3G, please?
This is one of two proposals by Brave Oak Vineyards. It's file number AGP 2005-00005. It's a request to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve by adding approximately 41.5 acres, rescinding an existing contract, and entering into one of two new expanded contracts. The project site is located at 6675 Airport Road, approximately 1 mile south of the intersection of Airport Road and Australia Road, approximately 3/4 mile north of the city of Paso Robles. The site is in the Salinas River planning area. The property is cultivated extensively with irrigated vineyards, and it qualifies for the program with over 20 acres of irrigated vineyards, which is the threshold, on class 4 and better soils. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 40 acres and a term of 10 years. That concludes my presentation.
Are there any questions of staff? I see none. So with that, I will open to the public. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to address the board on this item? And I see no one. You didn't get up fast enough, Mr. Vaughn. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom Vaughn, representing the owner on this item as well. And I'm here to answer any questions there may be and ask for your support.
I see no lights, so thank you very much. With that, I will close it to the public and bring it back to the board for discussion or action.
Move for approval.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. With that, may we have an introduction of item C3H, please?
This is file number AGP 2005-00009. and it's the second proposal by Brave Oak Vineyards to alter the boundaries of an agricultural preserve by adding approximately 44.2 acres in this case, rescinding an existing contract, and entering into one of two new contracts. The project site is located at 6675 Airport Road, approximately 1 mile south of the intersection of Airport Road and Australia Road, and all of the rest is the same as the previous, so I'll go ahead and move forward. The property is cultivated extensively with irrigated vineyards as well, and it qualifies for the program because it has over 20 acres of irrigated vineyards on Class 4 and better soils. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 40 acres and a term of 10 years on this request as well. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Are there any questions of staff? I see no light, so with that I will open it to the public. Mr. Vaughn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom Vaughn, representing the owner. Again, I have nothing further to add. Ask for your support and approval.
Are there any questions of Mr. Vaughn? I see no light, so thank you very much. With that, I see no one else coming forward. I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board for discussion or action.
Move for approval, Madam Chair.
Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. And may we have an introduction of item C3I, please, the last one.
This is Agricultural Preserve 2003-00004, and it is a correction of the minimum parcel size provision for Michael Grissom et al. And a contract amendment, which was a preserve and contract amendment previously approved, to amend the boundaries of an existing ag preserve and enter into a new contract to reflect a lot line adjustment with the neighbor. The site is located about 3 miles east of the town of Creston along Ryan Road in the Elpamar, Australia planning area. This is before you due to some ambiguities in the historical mapping records. An 80-acre minimum parcel size was inadvertently referenced in the staff reports and exhibits that were approved last year. The correct minimum parcel size is 160 acres, which is reflected on the corrected exhibit and the resolution. The Agricultural Preserve Review Committee and the Planning Commission recommend approval with a minimum parcel size of 160 acres. That is the sole correction that is before you.
Thank you. Are there any questions of staff? I see Mr. Patterson's arm extend, but he didn't turn on his light. There it is.
No question.
Okay. With that, I will open it to the public. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to address the board on this item? I see no one getting up, so I will close it to the public and bring it back to the board for discussion or action.
Move approval.
Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. And that concludes this item. We don't need a final action?
No.
No, okay. Very good. Thank you very much. With that, we will move on to item C4. And may we have an introduction of item C4, please?
Item C4 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Almond Heights LLC of the Planning Director's determination concerning application for merger SUB 2004-00362/M05155 from Almond Heights LLC for 13 merged parcels on a 10.6 acre portion of a 30-acre property in the residential suburban land use category for property located off 21st Street, adjacent from the City of Paso Robles 4th District. Recommendation is for denial. And this item was amended at the beginning of your hearing today.
So may we have a staff report, please?
Certainly. Kim Murray, Planning and Building Staff. The project that is before you is an appeal of a merger application. This property has had several applications that affect the property. It first came in to be a TDC sending site. As part of that application, staff asked for verification of underlying parcels. That application is still on hold. Subsequent to that, the applicant filed for a grading permit and a subsequent minor use permit to grade in the road to serve the parcels. And finally, in May of this year, this merger application was filed. the original approval or the original request was to merge these parcels into 13 merged parcels. Could I have the PowerPoint, please? Oh, I do. Oh, thank you. Just to give you an idea of where we are in the county, this is just west of the city limits of Paso Robles, south of Mountain Springs Road. It's got city limits to the north, east, and also south. This is the assessor parcel map. This is an aerial photo. The property boundaries, if I can get the mouse to work here, follow this driveway, and this is Mountain Springs Road, and then down here to the city limits. The item in question is whether this Boston tract that was a map recorded in 1896 created these underlying lots through the tract. Just to clarify, a question has been raised about the notation in the upper right-hand corner here with the date of 1889. This date refers to the underlying via lots that was prior to the Boston tract. So it's just indicating which of the via lots it was applying to. And I do have an official or a copy of the Boston tract that's a little more complete than that. Part of the map got cut off in the PowerPoint presentation here, so I want your board to have a full copy of that. Overlaying the Boston tract on lot 40, this graphic is showing, although it doesn't match up completely, how the Boston tract applies to the underlying parcel. And the mergers that were requested are in this lower section of the Boston tract. There have been several points of appeal that were raised by the appellant. The first is that the map was recorded after 1893 and that should not be subject to the Gardner decision, and that the staff indication that the Board of Supervisors needed to recognize and approve the map in some form or fashion has not been supported. Staff response is that between 1893 and 1929, several changes came into effect through state law and local ordinance, but basically subdivisions needed to be approved by the local authority via some means per section 66412.7 of the Subdivision Map Act. Staff struggles with this time frame because usually what we have to do is go back through the microfiche, the handwritten minutes of the Board of Supervisors meetings, look from some sort of reasonable time frame and try to find evidence that, in fact, the board took some action either to approve the map itself or to accept the offers of dedication for streets that would recognize the layouts. The other method that we use is to go back through these very old books in the recorder's office. They're over 100 years old, and they're sorted by alphabetically by street name, and we go back and look for any of the street names that were recorded to see if, in fact, they had ever been accepted by the board. In this case, we were unable to find either.
Kim?
Yes.
On this particular slide, the last word is one I've never seen before.
Oh.
Questions?
It's a special spelling. That's supposed to be precedence.
Ah, okay, precedence.
Thank you for that clarification.
Mom spoke again.
No, I wanted to know if it was something legal. It's now a new legal term.
No, I'll let counsel respond.
It's an illegal spelling.
No, no new legal terms there.
She's trying to sound like me.
Poor Kim.
Okay, moving on. We were unable to find anything in the record that indicated that the board had, in fact, taken action for this map. Now, that doesn't mean that we couldn't still process a merger, but it just means that instead of using the map as the vehicle to establish legality of the lots, that then we have to look at deed history, which we've been able to find six parcels through the deeds, but that has been all that's been submitted to date. The next appeal item has to do with the official map of 1913, which shows the area in question as lots. There is a map, I don't know if you recall, in your previous location of your board offices outside of that area in the hallway, there's a map of the county of San Luis Obispo that was compiled by official records by the county surveyor in 1913. And this map was one of the topics in the Minari litigation, and the court found that the map did not create nor approve legal lots. In addition, the pre-1893 Via Lots map is shown on that map, but this Boston tract is not. The last issue, which is misspelled on the PowerPoint slide, has to do with the previously approved merger providing a precedence for staff needing to recognize these lots. And there was a previous merger of this property. It's shown on your screens there. The document was never recorded. We never got the signed and notarized copy back. However, the evaluation of this particular application was done through deeds. So in conclusion, although I would like to show you this screen here shows the merged parcels that were requested through this application. And the next slide shows the parcels that we could find or that were submitted deeds on that showed configuration of lots there. So in conclusion, staff would recommend that you adopt the resolution denying the appeal and affirming the determination of the Planning Department.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry about that, but
so
you know,
am I.
it's like, you know, years ago when the Guadalupe oil spill came up, and here was this word, D-I-L-U-E-N-T, I'd never heard before, never seen. It turns out it was a legitimate term, and I thought it was somebody's nightmare. It turned out to be a nightmare, but with that, are there any questions of staff? I see no light, so I have one. I would like to have our council discuss the relationship, I guess, between the Minari and the Gardner decisions.
I believe that the appellant is talking about the Gardner case in terms of the status of the official map. As Ms. Murray just indicated to the board, that's really not relevant here because this Boston tract is not shown on the official map. What the 1913 official map would accomplish is dealt with in the Gardner case, which is a Supreme Court case. And the Gardner case specifically says that an official map does not create lots. It was the county's position in the Minari case that was upheld in the Gardner case. So when you read Minari and all of the briefs that were filed by the county taking that position, you also have to read the Gardner case. And it was the Gardner case that was ultimately dispositive of the issue.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Patterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question of Ms. Murray, and that's regarding the Boston tract. We have reference in the staff report that it's 353 lots, and then we have reference in a letter from the appellant's attorney it's 131 lots. Could you give a clarification on that?
Certainly. The overall lots that were covered by that document showed 353 lots. I believe the smaller number of lots is what's in the appellant's ownership.
Okay. Thank you.
I have no other questions, so with that, I will open it to the public. I have three requests to speak forms. Let's see, the first person, well, usually the applicant speaks first, but you don't have you have to fill out these little yellow forms, otherwise I don't call on you.
I apologize. I'm Madam Chair, Ty Green representing the applicant. And what I'd like to do is focus on maybe what this isn't. I know with antiquated subdivisions, there's a lot of conflicting information and a lot of conflicting case law. What I'm talking about here really isn't covered by any case law, and it's based on statute and what I think are very simple facts. And let me see if I can lay those out. The map has a notation in the upper right-hand corner from, I believe it's 1889, when it was first recorded establishing the Villa Tract. What happened in 1993, that's when the subdivision, 1893, excuse me, that's when the Subdivision Map Act was first adopted. And in 1893, what the Subdivision Map Act said was a map creates a subdivision and saleable lots when the map is authorized by the proprietor, has been submitted to the county for recording in the county where the land is located, and that it is in fact recorded. And what happened here is in 1896, it's pretty clear that the proprietor determined that he wanted to sell lots, and he wanted to sell them in compliance with the 1893 Subdivision Map Act. So what he did was, you'll notice that on the bottom of the map there is the acknowledgement of the proprietor. It was done in Oakland, but that's just the acknowledgement, the owner saying, this is my map, I want this to be recorded to create a subdivision. It was submitted to the county and recorded on September, I believe it was 28th, 1896. So at the time the map was recorded by the county and submitted by the proprietor, it complied completely with the Subdivision Map Act that was in existence at that time. There was nothing in the Subdivision Map Act between 1893 and 1901 that required the government body to take any action approving it. There was no requirement that the board that consider the matter. There was no requirement that they talk about what the streets are going to be or anything like that. There was merely the requirement that it be acknowledged by the proprietor and recorded in the county where it was where the land was located. And that's what happened here. In 1901, the Subdivision Map Act was then amended, and that's when it was when you can first start looking back and said that board approval was required at that time. But by that time, the Boston Tract was already a legal and legitimate map. And in fact, in 1897, I believe there were, the number escapes me, 53 lots were transferred on that from that parcel. They eventually all ended up coming back into the same ownership, but they were transferred out based on that map. So what's happening here, this isn't a case where if you approve this map that you're basically giving your blessing to all antiquated subdivision maps. What you're talking about here is a map that was recorded in 1896 between 1893 and 1901, which completely complied with the law, and which is probably a limited precedence for, there aren't a lot of other maps out there like that, I don't believe. This is a map that fits under very unique circumstances. And under those unique circumstances, these lots existed at that time, and they can't be taken away. There have also been, since then, a recognition, and there's a recognition that lots of, that when a map, at the time a map's recorded is when you look to see if the lots were legitimately created. And in one of the statutes that I haven't heard talked about, but it's in the packet that was, I believe, given to the clerk and has been passed around, I hope. But it's Chapter 298 of the Political Code, and it was adopted in 1925 by the legislature. And I'll paraphrase what it says, but what it says basically is, look, if any map that's been adopted before today that was in compliance with the Subdivision Act when it was adopted and is a valid map, regardless of whether there might have been any problems with it, we don't want anybody coming in and talking about, well, the acknowledgement wasn't right or whatever the problem was. It basically says that if that map was recorded in compliance with the then existing Subdivision Map Act, that map is valid. And it was put in place to protect people that go out and buy property, just like my clients did. They bought properties based on an existing subdivision map, and the state of the law is those lots exist. The Minari case, I guess, it may apply for the official map issues, but it has nothing to do with what I am focusing on in this context. It has nothing to do with, and Gardner has nothing to do with it, because what I'm talking about here is a statutory interpretation to what are relatively simple facts. And the facts are that the map was recorded, and the map was recorded in compliance with the Subdivision Map Act, and nothing that can happen in between there. Nobody's ever abandoned it. Nothing's ever taken it away, and the map exists as it is today. And that's really the focus of what I am trying to get across here, without getting into all the other legal arguments that come about these antiquated maps. It's a lawyer's dream, these antiquated maps. I mean, you can sit down and read about it for hours, and it's changed, in the last 10, 15 years, it's changed dramatically. But for this map, it doesn't fit into any of the cases that I've read. It doesn't fit into any of the analysis that comes down. It's limited to this map complied with the Subdivision Map Act when it was recorded.
Okay, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. As I said, I have three requests to speak forms. The first is Susan Harvey. The second is Ron Stock. So if you would please come forward to the microphones, please. Mr. Stock can use the alternate microphone, and that saves us time waiting for you to walk around.
Thank you, Susan Harvey, president of PASAWatch. Thank you to the planning staff for the clearly
apparent diligence in preparing the staff report and your efforts, initiative, and research on this issue. Approval of more than 6 lots on this project would be a very bad precedent and would have serious impacts on the county. Passawatch asks that you deny this appeal and affirm the decision of the planning director to recognize 6 legal lots for which deed history has been provided. We do ask, however, for how a deed merger is different from a lot line adjustment and why a deed merger would result in more than 5 lots as specified by AB 497. In April 2000, the applicant failed to supply certificates of compliance establishing 156 lots. In September 2002, the applicant failed to supply certificates of compliance to receive an MUP for grading. Currently, the applicant has not yet provided certificates of compliance. The map does not predate the 1893 Map Act. No evidence has been brought forward to indicate that the subdivision has been recognized in any way by the county. Staff has only been able to verify 6 parcels that were created in this area. The court has found that the map of San Luis Obispo County, compiled by A.F. Parsons, did not create or approve legal lots. The April 2003 merger application was never completed. Conveyance of separately described lots which have never been separated from each other and which have always been conveyed together as a single contiguous group does not divide land. Separate parcels are created by conveyance when one unit is separated from the contiguous lots surrounding it, Lakeview Meadows Ranch versus the County of Santa Clara. The Subdivision Map Act provides local governments the essential tools for implementing their general plan by requiring that all subdivisions are consistent with the general plan, comply with CEQA, address health and safety issues, provide necessary infrastructure and improvements. Approval of this appeal would violate these provisions. Government Code 65302, Government Code 65300, Government Code 65030. The claims made here today are basically hearsay. The Boston Tract is in Supervisor Overt's district. We expect he will strongly support the decision by the Planning Director Holanda to uphold state, county law, and county law by denying this appeal. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Ron Stock, followed by Eric Greeney.
Morning. I'm Ron Stock. I own property across from the proposed subdivision of 13 parcels on the Villette lots. One major problem is how they are going to access these added houses. Right now, there's a narrow one-lane driveway which leads into the existing residence. Part of that driveway goes over my property as an easement for one house. I do not want this traffic and congestion running over my property. There would need to be substantial road improvements the driveway to support not only the proposed 13 houses, but to my understanding, there's already more land that has been subdivided behind the existing residence. The number is unknown to me at this time, and it may not. I'm not up on that. If you take 13 proposed lots that will become houses, one can easily expect there to be a minimum of 26 cars attached to those houses. Include the other lots, add 2 cars, and you have created congestion noise to what is now a peaceful area that was not meant for this kind of development and traffic. The definition that is explained in the paperwork we received is deceiving, which states the property is off of 21st Street, when in fact if you were able to drive straight through where West 19th Street dead ends, you would drive right into the property passing through one residence. I also understand the city has plans to annex the area into the city at some future date, which would most likely give water rights to the subdivision, resources we are running thin on and everyone suffers for. I moved to the county for one reason, for a reason, one of which was to escape the city congestion that this proposed subdivision brings. I urge you to deny the subdivision as the area cannot support it. It's a peaceful area now, one that includes nature and wildlife. Let's not destroy this forever with houses, concrete, and traffic. Thank you.
And thank you for your comments. Eric Greening, and that's my last request to speak form from the general public, and the applicant will have 5 minutes to respond to anything.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I would like to thank the staff for their diligent work. We do need to maintain high standards in recognizing duly recorded lot. The cumulative impact of setting the precedent or the precedent, as the case may be, of essentially recognizing lots on hearsay when evidence hasn't been presented to you in paper could be enormous. Antiquated subdivisions are recognized by all of us as a huge problem and as a challenge and obstacle in achieving rational growth patterns today. Let's at least make sure that every such subdivision we do have to grapple with is in fact real. You don't have the evidence before you to recognize these lots, so I would ask you to please deny this appeal and uphold, do not undercut, your staff's professionalism. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And now the applicant has 5 minutes to rebut.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry I didn't arrive in time to submit a paper. May I ask a couple of questions?
Sure. And you can give the, but you have to ask your name for the record.
Oh, sure. My name is Larry Lynch. I live at 1840 Locust, just inside of the city of Paso Robles, very near this property, and received your notice of the meeting. And I talked with Kim Murray about what was planned. I gather that the implications of your decision are not relevant to your decision. But, of course, it's the implications that I'm concerned about that have been spoken about by the opponents. And that is, I wonder where the city of Paso Robles is about why they're not here with a position on something that is right by their boundaries. And there are some planned developments right inside of Paso Robles that butt up against it that the city is in favor of on its water tower property. So basically, the question is, what is the implication? If you approve this, does that mean they can do anything they want to with those lots on existing roads? Does the county have any control after that? Or if you deny it, then what do they have to do? And I would appreciate it if the staff could explain that for us, if you don't mind.
No, that'd be fine. After public comment, we always have asked staff to
okay,
respond.
Good. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Green, you have 5 minutes.
Well, I really have nothing really more to offer than my original presentation. I just think it's important to focus on the state of the law at the time the map was recorded, and that this map has been there recorded for over 100 years, and has been the public's been on notice of it. And it's not, again, it's not a precedent-setting decision, I however you spell it. It's not a precedent-setting decision because it's, I'm sorry, because this is limited to this unique set of facts. And so when you're looking at this, I know there are some implications, you know, that are out there, but we're talking about this map under these facts. We're talking about property owners' rights that they bought the property under the existing state of the law, and they're entitled to have their lots recognized. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, or my clients would also if it's something that's physical out there.
Okay. I'm trying to think how to do this, because we promised Mr. Lynch that we would respond to his questions, which we will. But Mr. Green is at the microphone, so we will get back to you. Mr. Ashajan.
Thank you, Mr. Green. I know that what's in front of is the entitlement and not the project or the planning portion of it. But as you go forward, has there been any thoughts given as where you do take access to these properties? Is there an existing access since there is a neighbor with a concern?
I know there is, and I'll let Mr. Vaughn address that. I'm not really the engineer or the surveyor on this.
Tom Vaughn, thank you. Yes, we have, in fact, submitted a grading plan for this particular property. The voluntary mergers, even though it was just recently submitted, has been discussed with Mr. Larry Kelly, who has since retired, some time ago, and we were waiting in order to actually get an approval for the grading plan. I'm not sure if Kim brought any of that information with her on this or not, but yes, the grading plan did follow the existing, for the most part, the existing alignment of the Boston tract as it served the lots that were being merged. I believe there was one other question as to additional development. There are two existing lots further to the west of this property that is lots 40, I'm looking at Kim, 42 and 44, I believe. One of which is actually served off of 21st Street. So that is the only additional property that is part of this particular ownership.
Okay. Thank Does you. That conclude your okay, Mr. Lenthal?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like County Council to respond to some of Mr. Green's comments, and he was quoting not some case law as much as interpretations from different things.
And while can I add to that? Because our decisions need to be consistent how we've interpreted these issues in the past.
The first thing is that the reason that I mentioned the Minari case and the Gardner case is that that had been raised by the appellant with respect to the official map. And as I understand Mr. Green's current position, that he's abandoned that position and he's focusing on, let's look at the law in 1896. I think that's very instructive because prior, 1893 was when the law was adopted and the map was recorded in 1896. Prior to 1893, you could record a map, okay? Everybody recorded maps. The problem was that they did not create parcels. You had to separately convey the parcels. In 1893, they adopted the first Map Act. The purpose of that Map Act was not to subdivide parcels. It was to set forth the requirements for accuracy in recording. So after 1893, you could record a map that met with the requirements of the 1893 Act, but you still had to separately convey the parcels. 1901 was the requirement for agency approval, the Board of Supervisors' approval. Okay, and we're familiar sometimes when the county is adopting an ordinance, the board is concerned with what do we do about existing situations, and so we have in some of our ordinances put in grandfather clauses. The legislature had the same problem. So the legislature in later map acts, which governed the regulation and design of subdivisions and actually allowed subdivisions to create lots, in those map acts, the legislature put in grandfather clauses and said basically that if you meet these requirements, then your old map will be validly creating parcels. And those grandfather clauses all talk about agency approval. So Mr. Green is right. This map in 1896, when it was recorded, met with the law at the time, which governed what you have to do to record a map. However, it did not meet the grandfathering clause requirements of subsequent legislation governing subdivision maps and the creation of parcels by those subdivision maps. Mr. Green referred to the political code section of 1925. We have that here. If you read it carefully, I think you can see the intent was to correct a situation and perhaps there was a mistake made in filing a map. There was a mistake made in describing parcels, a mistake made in the acknowledgments, and to correct those mistakes. But a subsequent map act, subsequent to this section, 1929 map act, had the same type of grandfather clause to which I was just referring. That would be completely inconsistent with this if this section in the political code from 1925 was meant to take maps which were filed in 1896, complying with a law that only governed what you can record and what you can't record and how you record, if it somehow transformed that law into a law which would actually create parcels by the filing of a map. The 1893 law never did that. Before 1901, if you wanted to subdivide parcels and create parcels. You could file a map, and you could deed those parcels out separately. That changed after 1893 and subsequent map acts, because in subsequent map acts, you were allowed to, if you complied with the design and improvement provisions of the act, and you had the approval of the Board of Supervisors, the very act of getting that approval created lots, and that's the law today. And that's why we have applications for subdivisions. But the law in 1896, and it's absolutely true, they complied with that law, but that law didn't change the fact that if you're going to create separate parcels, you have to separately deed them out.
Does that answer your question?
It does, but I would like to give Mr. Green an opportunity to respond to that just for a minute in case.
Well, I don't want to get into a...
I want one response. I'm not abandoning anything. So I was focusing. It's not abandoning.
Okay, you can have... You can have 3 minutes.
Three minutes.
And that's it.
What Mr. Lindholm's arguing is basically changing what used to be the magic date of 1893 that we've all heard about, and now all of a sudden the magic date becomes 1901. There is nothing that I've seen anywhere where a court has said a validly recorded and adopted subdivision map that was complied with the law at the time it was recorded can later be invalidated by a change in the law. There were lots transferred out under this map. There were 53 lots transferred out. They were transferred out in under bulk deeds. They weren't all individual, but they were transferred out on this map. But I don't think Mr. Lindholm and I disagree. I don't think that's the issue here. The issue here is that at the time that this map was recorded, it complied with the law. Later changes in the law might affect later maps, but not the maps recorded between 1893 and 1901. I think Mr. Lindholm and I have a difference of opinion here, and that's basically all I can say, but there's no case law supporting Mr. Lindholm's position, I don't believe.
Okay, thank you. Mr.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Just sort of one last word with respect to Mr. Green's argument. He is trying to point and to the absence of the law standing for a proposition, okay? He has not abandoned his argument about the official map, but if you look at the history, okay, the cases involving official maps have said if being official map doesn't create parcels, okay? And that was pre-1893. Post-1893, the law was changed to govern how things are recorded. Okay, Mr. Green has no authority for the proposition that just because you recorded a map in 1896 that complied with the recording law of 1893, that you could create parcels without separate conveyance. If Mr. Green is willing to concede that the issue here is how many parcels were conveyed and how many parcels were created by those conveyances, we can certainly sit down with him and look at that factual issue.
I'm not willing to concede that. In fact, I think I said it doesn't make any difference.
Okay, I have one question. Mr. Green refers to transferring out, and Mr. Lindholm refers to conveying. What is the...
I think that Mr. Green didn't want to try to argue that a bulk conveyance of a bunch of parcels actually creates separate parcels. I think he was referring to them as, and I'm speculating on this, I'm sure he's going to clarify what he intended, but the law is that you have to separately convey the parcels. It's not enough to say, I'm transferring 75 parcels to Mr. Green. They have to be separately conveyed.
Okay.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but I was not. I do believe that if you looked at that, the transfer of the lots or conveyance, whatever you want to call it, transferring those lots, whether you do it under a bulk deed or not, is transference of those lots. So whoever bought them by description. If you look at the deed, it talks about lots 2, 3. What I can't remember the exact numbers, but it defines the lots specifically as individual lots. There isn't a deed for every lot, but they are referenced individually.
Okay, thank you. With that, I think we will close the legal arguments.
I did.
For the moment.
Can I cut the legal argument off? It's not a legal argument. I wanted to clarify what Mr. Vaughn said about something physical. The current access road, I'm not sure it came across, for this subdivision is on entirely on the Almond Heights LLC property. They've moved it. Excuse me? It's not on the gentleman's property you spoke before. I think that was what somebody asked,
okay. And
I'm not sure the question quite got answered in the way it was asked.
Okay, thank you. I would like, at this point, clarification of Mr. Lynch's concerns.
I will try. The question, as I understand it, was what is the implication of the action today, and are there any subsequent controls over how the property develops? The implication, as I understand it today, is if your board chooses to recognize those 13 merged parcels, that they would be able to go forward for development. The control, if I'm understanding Mr. Lynch's question, would come in through the minor use permit that's required to develop the road access. Because of the amount of site disturbance for the grading permit, there is a use permit that does have a public hearing associated with it. At this point, both of those applications are on hold pending this determination.
Okay, and also with that minor use permit, there's notification of the surrounding neighbors.
Notification of surrounding owners and also notification of the city.
Okay, so you would be notified. With that,
I did have another.
Mr. Patterson has a question. Mr. Ovid has probably a motion.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question regarding the map. Mr. Green made references to when those parcels were created based on, you know, a series of dates and law changes and so forth. But that all preceded 1913. And it was pointed out that the Boston Tract does not appear on that 1913 map. And I do know that, you know, our council's opinion is that that doesn't mean that they're necessarily legal lots. But I'm just curious that if they were created, why didn't they appear on that official county map? That doesn't hold.
I'm afraid I'm not old enough to know. But the Villa Tract is on the map. It does show it on the map. For whatever reason, the Boston Tract didn't get picked up and put on the map. I just don't know why. I think, though, the point is that Mr. Lindholm made, and I might almost agree with him on some level, that I hate to do that, but that we're not talking here. The official map, just because it's on the official map, wouldn't mean necessarily that it's a parcel that a parcel was created. There has to be other things happen. In this case, I think we had other things happen. The official map doesn't really make any difference.
Well, except I would think that if they were official parcel, they would show up.
I don't know that that's a fair assumption, because you know the official map may not necessarily pick up. And Mr. Vaughn knows a lot more about maps than I do, and he's tapping on my shoulder, so I'll let him take a try.
If I may, Madam Chair, to answer the question, yes, the Boston Tract is shown as an overlay over Villa Lot 40. In fact, I did show Kim Murray that. We went and looked at the map personally, and I believe Mr. Orton happened to walk by at the same time. And
okay.
So it is shown as a series of lines and blocks. It's not specifically called out as Boston Tract because of the scale. But Lot 40 is shown with all the lines.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ovid, if you're going to make a motion, I have a comment to make first.
No, there's a lot of things that go flying around here, and Mr. Lindholm knows that I'm not necessarily in agreement with what he says in terms of these older subdivisions. And ironically, they handed me the old Minari decision. And in that, it says that the county does recognize maps from the 1890s, 1901, 1923, as part of an argument. But then when I read the final decision on this thing, on the Minari, it actually said that the county was supposed to recognize the 577 that were asked for, but put a stay on it until there was a clarification of the appeals. And we never went back to trial. We basically negotiated it out to 157 lots. So there was never a final decision by the court as to whether those were actually created. The other thing that pops in here is the issue with this the case in Sonoma, which basically dealt with a whole different types of lots and what was there and what was in existence. From what I can gather that was not in the staff report that was given to us is that, and one question was asked to me by county council staff yesterday, was there intent to show roads? And when you read the signature of the guy, the person who owned this property in the 1890s, it's talked about the roads and the subdivision of the roads. There's just so much situation that says that, you know, we can't tell you exactly what everybody's thinking, but then when you look at the following issues where land was transferred amongst people, and I have this same argument, that we saw individual lots that were recognized, and they were transferred, even in staff's report they show them, as individual lots, recognized as individual lots in a transfer and mentioned as lots. So my opinion on this is that these lots existed. Now, to get beyond all this legal entanglement on the issue here is that what I'm looking at is by issuing these certificates, we actually merge and clean that whole thing up. It's gone after we issue these certificates. There then is only 13 lots, and you have an RS zone which says you can have 1 acre minimum, and that's in the county. Now, if they desire to go to the city, they still have that 1 acre minimum as in the county unless the city decides to zone it different. The other issue is if this were true, then look at the villa lots, which are next door. They had to have been recognized in order to establish those lots. So the underlying Boston tract had to have been recognized in order to establish the villa lots because they were established many years after any of this argument was there. And if you look at the surrounding area and go over towards the Mountain Springs area and all that kind of stuff, which were, again, the same, almost the same area, you see now, even within the city, these are all 1 acre lots or larger lots that are built up in there. And I don't know, the information that was given to me says that I believe those lots were in existence. And I think that if we move this action forward with the certificates, we tend to clean up all of it. It's done and it's over with.
Council has.
Just going to comment a little bit further that the real relevance of the Menari case and the Gardner case today is that the Gardner case confirmed the county's position in Menari, and it's relevant here for purposes of the official map. But the second point is that the real problem we're dealing with is the same problem we had in Menari, and that is that all sorts of maps existed before 1900. People, there were railroad survey maps where a railroad would file a map for purposes of showing what it ultimately hoped.
That's Santa Margarita Ranch, not the Menari Ranch. Don't get them mixed up.
No.
I'm talking all about over everywhere.
The general situation is you had maps all over the place that were not intended to create parcels and did not create parcels. There were two ways, if you want to deed property to somebody, two ways to do it. The first way is you could describe the boundaries of the property using written language. The second is you could refer to some document. If in 1893, if I had wanted to convey parcels, I could draw a little map on a napkin. In the deed, I could say, I'm conveying to Mr. Patterson the following parcel as described on this particular napkin. Okay, so we had all sorts of maps that were not intended to create parcels. And the problem that we've been wrestling with, and we had to wrestle with in Menari prior to 1893, was what was the status of those maps prior to 1893. The problem we're dealing with today, as Mr. Green has pointed out, is what are the status of maps as of 1896? And it's our belief that if you look at the law, you're going to find that the 1896 map by itself did not create parcels without separately deeding those parcels out.
Mr. Lindholm, if I might, Madam Chair.
Well, you might, but I also have a comment.
I want to read something that was given to me, and this is part of the evidence that was handed in. County for years has recognized 1989 map as a valid subdivision of land. The 1889 Hot Springs map, which is the Menari issue, as it continues on, included in the county official maps of 1890, 1903, 1913, and 1933, and it's shown in the county's land use element as official land use map. This was from the judge's, you know, papers, and then it concludes in the back when you go to the dissolution or whatever you call it, the action to be taken. You know, it said, and I understand that they did not get the 577 because we negotiated out. But when you look at it, it said determination of County San Luis Obispo is a Minari. This is county. Determination of the county of San Luis Obispo that Minari was not entitled to certificates of compliance was a premise upon error of law. County was obligated to issue certificates of compliance for all 577 lots. And then it goes on to say that what we did is we held this up in abeyance while we looked at the Santa Barbara thing. So the law, again, in this particular case, although the outcome was not 100 or 577 lots, it was 150 was done by negotiation. But the issue is the lots were recognized by a map. And I think that's the problem that we're having is that county council surmises that these lots are not recognized yet. When you look in here all the way through this 5 year or those five time dates, this map was carried forward.
The language that Mr. Over just read is from the Superior Court decision by Judge Burke that was overturned by the Court of Appeals. So that language has no legal significance at this point in time because the decision was overturned.
But you're telling me the county doesn't recognize these maps? In this writing, it says the county recognized. It didn't say that the judge recognized it. It said the county recognized it. And that was only specifically to the Minari. And you got into this railroad thing, which is the Santa Margarita, which is a whole different case in itself, because that was whether it was a track map or even a map at all.
The language that was read, the evidence that Judge Burke appears to be referring to, is the fact that if it was mentioned in the official maps, it must have meant that it was a created parcel and that the county recognized it. However, we know from the Gardner case, and I'm sure Mr. Green would agree with this, and the Gardner case said that an official map did not create lots or give any status to lots that would not have been created by the separate conveyance.
Okay, right. With that, I will make my comments. In my view, there have been a lot of assumptions made as to what occurred in 1893, 1896, 1901, and all the way up to 1925 when I'll make it personal, when my grandfather arrived in the county and was one of the first surveyors. So he insisted that everything be done kind of by the book. But because of all these assumptions that the writers meant this, the writers meant that, and none of us up here are lawyers. I mean, the five of us are not lawyers. Mr. Lindholm is the lawyer. That in my opinion only, the best way that we can make a decision, a valid decision, and be totally consistent as we go through, you know, each one of these legal things that comes to us, and I refer to the staff report, page C44, which I think has an excellent statement. In this particular instance, staff was unable to find, and the appellant was unable to provide any evidence that the county took action to recognize this subdivision in any way, that the deeds were not available to prove the existence of the parcels. And we have to have an objective method for doing these evaluations. We cannot always rely on our assumptions as to what somebody meant in 1893. Because even though I've been around a long time, that even precedes me. So, with that, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Green commented that this particular item was based on its own set of facts. And in my limited term here, each of these types of items are based on their own particular facts. And I have to agree with Supervisor Bianchi that we need an objective view, a consistent view, and when the planning director and the planning staff and county council consistently weighs in on how these determinations are made and should be made, I think that it's incumbent on us to follow that advice. And my concern is that there are literally hundreds of maps out there in the county that people could keep coming in with them and trying to find ways to manipulate the situation to create these lots. And there is a mechanism for identifying the parcels and creating their validity. And I think if the appellant wants to go through that process and show us that these parcels have indeed been created in the appropriate way, then that's great, and they should pursue that avenue. But I have to support the staff's recommendation.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to add one thing that I neglected to add with my previous statement. I find it interesting that the applicant was able to find deeds to support the six parcels, but was unable to find the deeds, but was unable to support more due to lack of deed history provided for the other portions of the area in question. So you use one method, the applicant used one method, an objective method, which was a good one, to provide the deeds, but was unable to provide the deeds, which gives us the objectivity to make a decision. And I, you know, when it comes to land use, I think we really need to be objective. And I believe outside we have some visitors from Russia.
Yeah, the Russian.
I would like to ask.
Should we get this done and then we can hear?
Yeah, we will. Yeah. We'll finish this one. So if you'd make a motion, Mr. Ovid.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the interesting thing is I also, and given in hearing today, is a deed after 1893, which actually, if I count right, shows at least 13 or 23, I think it's 23 lots of what they call Block 9 of Lot 40, which was actually transferring that number of individual lots because they are individually mentioned, so that they had to be in existence in order to transfer them. And I think that's the kind of thing that was not put in the staff report that we've got today that shows that some of these lots were in existence, because that was only Block 9. Staff reports at Block 10, I think the other ones, there were some other ones that showed individual lots that were transferred. So the recognition of the individual lots is what I'm going on, and I think there's substantial enough evidence here for me to make a motion to uphold the appeal and allow for the 13 certificates. And based on the finding of evidence presented in today's hearing and the fact that I think it will, this is not what you call a legal finding, would actually clean up this and get it out of our system now and get these going forward. So my motion is to uphold the appeal.
So that would be a tentative
It'd
motion?
It would be a tentative.
And when are you talking about bringing it back?
On this tentative things, they're not going to take that amount of time. You know, when they come back, it'll take maybe 5 minutes.
But does that mean that staff has to give up her lunch hour to bring in the appropriate...
No. I'm not talking about bringing it back today, but
okay.
I'm not going to sit here and wait till January 27th. I think we can find a time in between.
January 20th. I mean, it's December 20th.
December 20th?
Yeah.
That would be to bring it back then.
We could bring it back sooner. Mr. Orton is going to be on vacation. And when
we have higher priorities now.
Well, when the findings, what we're saying is bring it back sooner, Mr. Orbit.
Yeah, that's
if we
fine.
We'll bring it back next week, possibly. No?
There's no time on next
week. We haven't had a second
none.
Yet.
Yeah. I mean, none.
No, this, we'll leave it to December 20th.
Well, that's the only one with time on it.
Okay, December 20th.
I have not heard a second yet.
Second that.
I had a brilliant idea that just went. Mr. Patterson, there's a second for discussion.
Yeah, again, as I said, I think that we're traversing a slippery slope.
Microphone.
And
your mic's on.
Is your mic on?
Thank you. As I said earlier, I think we're traversing a slippery slope here, and we need to, if what Mr. Ovid says relative to deeds that have been conveyed, and he has evidence of that today, that I think that should actually go back to staff and let them go through the process and determine exactly how many parcels are there, and it isn't a judgment that we should make, and I can't support the motion.
Yeah, my thought came back. If all it takes to create a parcel is to mention that they are there, wow. I'm thinking of all of my. Hey, that would give me like 20 parcels instead of 6.
Well, the only other argument I have on this
or 50 instead of 6.
Is the reverse of this is what's happening is that I have communities where you have houses built on 4 lots with one in the middle that wasn't built on in a separate ownership but is not considered a legal lot because of this thing of being transferred, and yet somewhere along the line it was transferred. And I think in this particular case, as I said, that the evidence given to me show that there is existing lots, and by giving the certificate of compliance, we clean this mess up and it moves out of the way.
Okay, may we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Ashajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
No.
Mrs. Bianchi?
No. And with that, concludes item C4. We will not go into closed session at this moment, however, because we do have some visitors from Russia that we would like to acknowledge, and I believe Mr. Ovid has the documentation for that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I can invite all of them down, and I will ask Natasha Dalton, who's actually a resident of San Luis Obispo County, to introduce our guest because she has a better capability of saying their names than I do. But what we have here is a program is called Open World Program, and these delegates are from Russia. And over the past years, it's been 89 different regions representing 55 ethnic groups that have come to the United States. They're here in San Luis Obispo County for this week. All of them, with the exception of one who is a student, are educators, and they will be looking at all of our institutions throughout the county, and the Paso Robles Rotary Club has been the sponsor. So without further ado, I'd like to present Natasha Dalton.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. And would you, I know this sounds ridiculous because you've already been introduced, but would you repeat your name again for the record?
Natasha Dalton.
Thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure here to introduce the Russian delegation here. All these people are educators from different parts of Russia, from the north, from the south, from the east, from the west, and from the central Russia. There are 5 people, and they're all from different parts. Here is Yelena. Maria Livkova, and she is the dean of the history department in the university in Siberia. She is also teaching history to the students there, and she also has a degree in law.
I thought only criminals went to Siberia.
Here you go. And here is Margarita Gagina, and she is the elementary school teacher who is teaching in a very different and innovative way for us, because she is teaching there is no homework in her program, so the students study at school in the classroom, and she is implementing yoga, gymnastics, music, dance, and all that for her students. So it's, you know, very interesting and kind of different. And then we have a student from the Kuban University, and we kind of figured out that the Kuban University is kind of like San Luis Obispo and Cal Poly, because it's an agricultural area, it's in the south, and that's where he is from. But he's studying public relations. And we have Yelena Solntseva, and she teaches music, and she also is the director of the youth theater in her town. And the town is in the north, in the northern part of the country, close to Finland and, Sweden.
I don't know whether I should introduce myself.
If you could have to come to the microphone.
So my name is Olga Faivtsova. So I'm from Kursk, from central part of Russia. I'm a teacher of English. at Kursk State University, and here I'm as a facilitator of the group.
Thank you.
Very good.
And we have two other gentlemen.
Madam Chair, those are the current president of Rotary, if you want to, and Don Jacobs is a volunteer who runs the program.
Yeah, Doug Barth, the current president of the Paso Robles Rotary Club, and we're the group sponsoring the Russians here in this area. They're here for a one-week intensive educational experience. They're meeting with the we just got done with the Julian Crocker County Superintendent of Schools. Yesterday they met with Pat Sane, Dr. Sane, in the Paso Robles School District, met the high school, met at the middle schools. And they've got a full week jam-packed, and it's all an educational exchange, so they can learn more about our educational system, as well as educators here can get experience and feedback from them as to what the difference in those two systems are. Thank you. Okay,
thank you. And there still is another gentleman in the back.
Oh, Don Jacobs.
I'm Don Jacobs, and former teacher to Jerry, so what he does, you can blame me for. And I'm happy to be here, and we're happy to have our Russian delegates. This is the third year that we've had teachers, and one year we had ecologists, Mr. Patterson was kind enough to show them around the Paso Robles Water District a couple of years ago. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Robles.
What I have for each of them is the county guide with the Visitors and Conference Bureau, also a guide to the government in San Luis County so that you can better understand what we do, since they referred to me as the politician at breakfast the other day. And also
the consummate county, politician, I might add.
No, ma'am, it was just the politician.
Madam Chair, if I may comment,
yes.
While Harry's giving out the materials, is that I had the good fortune of meeting Natasha a couple of years ago and the group and spending several hours with them in Atascadero at a variety of activities. And they were all in some way related to environmental studies or environmental activities in Russia. And I still get an occasional postcard from them. So it was quite a pleasant experience.
Thank you. Are there any questions about what we do from any of our visitors? Do you have any questions about?
So yes. So what are the issues that you are discussing today, and have you reached an agreement on that? When we came, you voted, and some people voted yes, and some people voted no.
Well, the issue that you probably may have heard a little bit of the discussion about was it was a legal issue, basically regarding. Not a huge parcel of land, but a relatively large parcel of land right outside of Paso Robles. And in order to
give her a minute.
There is a comment here. They said it's such a you're running this county and all the serious issues are discussed here, and you have this little drawings and pictures. What's that about?
Well, this morning we had the distinct pleasure of having some children here from a program called Head Start. And these are very small children below the age usually of five who are in a special program to help them prepare to go into kindergarten. They're usually children that...
Preschool.
Preschool children that are monolingual, some of them, and some of them are bilingual. And they always bring us a gift, little pictures. And so we left the little pictures up there because we're proud of these little guys.
And that's why we're wearing those buttons today, EOC.
How sweet.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Would they like to take one with them?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tasha, where else are the teachers going on this tour?
Cal Poly?
Yes, Cal Poly. Yes.
Hearst Castle they get to go to.
There you go.
Oh, you're going to come over to my... You'll be coming to Hearst Castle?
Yes.
That's my district. That's paradise. It's the most beautiful one in the county.
Don, does someone in your group have a camera so you can bring forward for a group photo here?
Yeah.
Yes, why don't you just have them come on forward and we'll get a photograph. Are you going to take it or we'll get somebody to take it so you can be in the picture?
You don't speak Russian, too?
I should have brought
there's going to be like seven cameras, folks.
Oh, they keep switching out.
Go ahead.
You can line, you know,
good
line
to
up.
See you.
Once again, yeah. I'll see you guys once.
Welcome.
Yeah,
Maria.
I can answer more questions.
That's my name.
Maria.
Yeah.
Siberia, very cold.
You have an Armenian name.
I'm Armenian.
And Marco dad is Armenian.
Oh.
So my stepdad.
Okay. We're cousins.
Welcome.
My parents survived the Armenian genocide and came to Lebanon. That's where I was born. That I immigrated from.
Natasha.
Okay.
Squish.
Camera time.
Come on, guys, squish.
We should bring them up here.
Did you get all of them?
He's got
a load of. He's learned how to use every one of them.
you guys move in. You got to have that rotary shirt in the picture.
Oh, sure.
You can count it as makeup. Okay. I'll try one more time. We started saying borscht instead of
cheese. Yeah. I tried that yesterday.
If you want to get in here, why don't you ask somebody else to take some of those pictures?
He doesn't have rotary pen on.
We got Don yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
We'll get him the rest of the week.
Great.
Okay, I'm not.
No, there's still more. More?
That's it?
Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Thank you. Welcome.
This bark is from this particular birch trees. They only grow in one little area. That would be interesting for you.
Yes.
One little area in Karelia where she is from. They're still discussing whether it's a birch tree or a different kind of tree that nobody knows about. But oh my goodness! Because you know all the warmth, you know that you know because the wood, you know, keeps the warmth. So you know maybe you will feel it. I don't know.
We'll feel the lump, warmth of the
lump. And this is amber from Baltic.
Oh really?
She's from Baltic Sea. You know the most of the Baltic. Yeah. The amber comes from Baltic Sea, and she lives there.
So this is from Armenia.
Thank you very much.
This is from
Thank
Armenia.
You.
Yeah, the black stone.
Oh, the black stone.
Yeah. I don't know what they call it in Russian.
Oh, onyx. Onyx. Onyx.
My worry is.
This is again. It's all the wooden thing.
It's made from the worst.
Thanks for not embarrassing me. You said it was a B-minus student.
And this is the.
You taught him. You still have all your hair.
It was dark when I first started.
In Siberia, and so that's how it works. Email address. Industrial and like all the mining going on. You as a college, you know.
Yes, I did. Thank you.
Oh, I'm missing my order because they started not today.
Consider
some makeup.
The teacher of children.
If we do an assembly email, we'll do it.
Thank you.
Sure. Thanks for bringing him down. Appreciate it.
Not our babies.
Okay. Thank you. You get to show them the art center across the street.
Oh, we should.
Yeah, because we'll be right there for the restaurant. Right?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Does Maria speak Armenian?
Kim?
Hopsos.
John.
Yeah. We know the important words of all languages. Well, thank you all very much for coming. It's really our pleasure to have you here. And
thank you for it again.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll give you my card.
Thank you. You can play
check
the
game. It's okay. Yeah,
she can tell her dad.
I call myself the queen of the board because
you guys are going up there now? You're not going to go shopping downtown?
Yeah, because
I know last year you couldn't get him all those drugs. Yeah, you're running late. Yeah, okay. Yeah. She had no problem parking over there.
You want to keep that under wraps? Yeah. Oh, I know.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. They're going to go closed session, but I'll meet you up there. So I might be a few minutes. I don't need to be a closed session or anything that's going on.
I'm not sure how long.
No, that's the next item. That's the next item, man. That's just electronics we have.
Because I have relatives from Siberia. Yeah. But too bad I didn't. But to bring it to welcome them in Russian. Maybe next time around.
Don't tell me Ty Green speaking Russian.
I have to remind myself on the words.
Oh, yeah?
Let's see. All
right.
Okay. Okay.
Good.
Thanks for not embarrassing me.
You know, she lives in a little city that is actually, she lives in a city, and then to get to the main Russia, she has to cross two borders.
Oh, really?
Lithuania and Belarus, because it was the Soviet Union, and then those countries became independent.
Yeah.
And so now she lives. So
it's easier. Same thing as Armenia.
Yes, kind of like that.
Oh, then back into Russia.
She has to go through two countries before she gets to Russia.
Oh.
Like a small
little,
piece of
land. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. With that, we've concluded our morning session, but we do need to have a request from council about how long closed session will last?
It shouldn't be very long. It depends on how much time we spend on the labor relations issues, but the lawsuit should take less than 5 minutes.
Okay. With that, I see no one in the chambers that wish to address the board on a closed session item. So with that, we will adjourn to closed session and return at 2 p.m.
Very good.
Jim.
Okay. Jim. How you doing?